At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Today's podcast is sponsored by my new favorite animated TV show, Tuttle Twins, the first cartoon series to teach kids principles of freedom, economics, and liberty, and to be funny in the process. Nowadays, hidden political agendas are constantly forced on your kids in entertainment and in schools. Tuttle Twins is a hilarious cartoon series that teaches kids about the principles of freedom without being overly preachy. It's educational and hilarious, and there are lots of jokes for adults too. The best part? You can watch Tuttle Twins entirely for free. Just go to TuttleTwins.tv, that is Tuttle Twins, TuttleTwins.tv, and over there you can watch all of the episodes for free. One more time, that's TuttleTwins.tv. Highly recommend it. Go check it out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me is destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Obain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on a wonderful guest. She is the host of The O Show. She is massive in the world of crypto, and she is a YouTuber, and this is the one and only Wendy O. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to chat with you, and yeah, we've followed each other for quite some time, so I'm hyped to talk to you.
Most definitely. So I've done a real brief intro right there, Wendy, but to give a little background for people who are not familiar with who you are and what you do, tell them a little bit about you.
So I go by Wendy O on the interwebs. I got into crypto end of 2017, and I was able to grow the largest crypto female YouTube channel in the world, which is very, very impressive for myself. So I'm very proud of myself. Before I got into crypto, I actually worked in infectious disease, HIV, AIDS. I managed patient care, coordinated their care. That particular demographic is very, very special. There's a lot of very interesting people that come out of that demographic. And one thing about HIV AIDS, it doesn't discriminate against race, gender, anything like that. If you, you know, if you participate in certain activities, stuff happens. So it's kind of my client base was very, very interesting. And I loved every single one of my clients. Most of them were really, really amazing people. And I am a mom, and I talk crypto, I talk finance, like all different types of stuff. And I, you know, I had a rough upbringing, very interesting upbringing in Los Angeles, California, County of LA. So yeah, that's a little bit about me, what I do. And I don't know if I mentioned, but I'm the mother to an amazing 5-year-old daughter. And being a mom is probably the coolest job that I do have.
Awesome. Well, there's so much interesting stuff that we can get into there. If you're happy to, can you share a little bit more about your background? Because it's always interesting to know how people got to where they are, because oftentimes, especially in the social media age, we just find and discover people typically once they've reached a certain level and people think you've just kind of appeared. But it's always interesting to dig back into the story a little bit to see how people got where they are and why they think the way that they do.
I'm actually happy that you asked that question, because I feel that most of us aren't able to share our stories to an extent, because, you know, people start following you and they assume that they know you. They look at you and they're like, okay, well, this person looks like this, so I'm going to classify them as this. But in reality, my background is very, very interesting, like my personal life, which I talk about it a little bit. And I'm one of those people on social media that what I post is what I'm feeling at the time. I don't have a brand. I don't stick to a script. I'm very outspoken. I have no filter. I mean, I'm a little bit more reserved these days because, you know, I do have a large following. But at the same time, I'm very expressive about my opinions. And I like to give everybody a fair shake. The way I like to judge people is not based off of how they look, who they are. Well, who they are, yes. But I have to meet somebody. Like, I can meet somebody that's super, super famous, or I can literally meet somebody from the streets. And unless I get to know you, then I'll be able to make a judgment call on your personality or who you are. And then if I don't like you, we don't vibe. But at the same time, I'm not interested in judging a single person based off of like a particular group. Because a lot of times people look at a group and they're like, okay, well, this group, I don't like them because of this. But in actuality, when you do that, you're discounting all of the good that you could get out of that person and the positive network aspect, or heck, maybe they just might do something to change the rest of your life. So I learned that when I was in healthcare. But part of how I got to where I got to is from a lot of the trauma that I experienced growing up. My dad passed away when I was seven. Well, when I was 11 years old, my parents split when I was seven. And my parents came from a little bit of money. My dad was pretty successful in traditional finance. Once him and my mom split because my dad got sick, we ended up moving from a brand new home into a 2-bedroom townhome with my great aunt and my grandma. So my mom, my two sisters and I, we shared a room until I was 18, from 7 to 18. And we lived in an area that was classified as kind of like the lower class, like lower middle class suburbs. But where I lived in California, in LA County, depending on what street or what neighborhood you go on, you're going to meet very interesting people. So I grew up in a townhome that was behind or in front of Section 8 apartments. And most of the people that lived there came from like the streets of LA. So there's a lot of gang fighting. There's a lot of violence that occurred. And the area I grew up, there's a lot of drug use and alcoholism. So I had to kind of, you know, navigate through all that stuff growing up. And then when I got to be 18, I went out. I moved to Hollywood. I met a musician, moved in with him. We had a very, very interesting tumultuous relationship. I totally butchered that. So I got to see a lot of what happened like in the music industry and, you know, just with different people in Hollywood. So I had a very interesting upbringing. And then I knew also came in contact with a lot of people from the streets. And there's a lot of terrible things that happened. There was also a lot of good things that happened because I learned to kind of navigate and to kind of read people. And that helped me work in the industry in healthcare. And the reason why that was so important is because when you work in healthcare, the healthcare system in the United States isn't equal. It isn't equal at all. It is 100% for profit. And healthcare to me is probably the biggest scam. Like a lot of people in crypto are like, fiat is the biggest scam. Oh my God. No, healthcare is the biggest scam because people are not treated. They don't diagnose you based on like as an individual. It's like as a group of people. Like if you're X, Y, and Z, oh, you're more prone to this, this, and that. And they don't really pay attention to outliers because it's too expensive to pay attention to outliers. And my upbringing and being able to relate to people, hang out with a lot of different people from all different backgrounds helped me thrive in healthcare and be able to take care of my clients. And because my client base was so diverse, like I had, and we also offered HIV testing at the site that I worked at in healthcare. So we would have straight men coming in, getting tested for HIV, which is very, very taboo. We would have women coming in because their partners were cheating on them. Generally, their partners were cheating on them with, you know, gay men or whatever it was. We had, you know, like gay, lesbian, trans, all different types of people coming in, people that were diagnosed, people from all different backgrounds. And I had to learn to speak to them. And when I mean speak to them, I mean to relate to them, learn who they were, learn about their background. Because if you just judge a person by their group, you're doing healthcare incorrectly. Healthcare is about kind of specializing care for your patient. So because I had such a diverse upbringing, I was around so many different people from so many backgrounds, from like, you know, people with a lot of money to musicians, to artists, to gang members, to people on the streets, to people doing all kinds of crazy stuff, to successful people. I was able to take that and incorporate it into my care. And I think that's what kind of makes me unique and different in crypto. So I took that approach of just showcasing kindness to everybody. And I kind of started my journey in crypto. It taught me how to network. It taught me how to talk to people, show compassion, listen. And then I was able to eventually, you know, start my YouTube channel, and that got exciting. People liked what I had to say. And I just kept posting content, posting charts, hosting free events, and kind of being an advocate for the underdogs, because that's where I come from. I come from poverty. I come from trauma. I come from, you know, things that were kind of out of my control. And I think it's important for people to see that, especially in crypto, because people look at folks that are in crypto, oh, you're rich, you have this, you have that, you got an early. No, my life was not easy. I did not come from upper middle class family. I came from a very poor family. I came from strife. I came from a lot of negativity. I was raised by all women. So I didn't have that strong male force in my life to kind of help navigate that. And that's important for women. And a lot of people discount the importance of the nuclear family, but it helped pushed and molded me to become who I am today, not take no for an answer, showcase kindness and respect, decency, but also set boundaries and not let somebody tell me you can't do this because you come from here or because you're this.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Something that struck me with a lot of what you said there, I mean, there's a lot of things, but there are many things you said there, which I feel like they should be common sense. Right? You were talking about judging people as individuals and not as groups. Hopefully, if we've learned one lesson from history, we should know the dangers of doing that. Or more like not doing that, shall we say, judging people, you know, not as individuals and just having this collectivist attitude. But we seem to be living in this era, which I talk about a lot, you're vocal about, where common sense seems to be becoming increasingly rare. Common sense is no longer common sense. People are afraid. We live in an era of fear. People are afraid to state the truth. People are afraid to state their opinions. People are afraid to have conversations with people who may disagree with them on certain things or may differ from them in certain ways. So where do you think all of that is coming from, in your opinion and estimation? And I guess, secondly, how do we progress out of this?
Part of the problem that we see with society is people are scared. People are scared of being canceled. People are scared of hurting other people's feelings. Back when I was growing up, because I'm a little bit older, I'm over 30, but back when I was growing up, comedy was...
I love the way you said that.
I'm like, I'm over 30 plus. But comedy was fun. Like, I literally remember how offensive stuff was. Like, you would watch Saturday Night Live and it was super offensive, but it was so funny. And they literally made fun of every single group. And also, a little bit of background about me. I am half Sicilian on my mother's side, and I am half Romanian German Jew on my father's side, which those groups generally do not mix together at all. They're not supposed to mix together. And a lot of people, and I'm only like second or third generation American, and a lot of people don't understand, when Sicilians actually came to America, they were not treated well, any way, shape or form, like at all. But I think that people are scared to be offensive, and it's okay to express your opinion and it might hurt some feelings, but I feel like showcasing decency is important and being kind of aware. But at the same time, we're in this era where we have the internet. And I think the internet is a beautiful thing, but it's also a very dangerous thing, because it allows too many people to express opinions without them thinking too fast. And I'm all for critical thinking. I'm all for people expressing their opinion, but I literally can get any one of my phones and I can tweet super fast and be like, whatever it is. And I can read a headline and then I react and I tweet it out. And it's just pure emotions. So instead of me digesting information, be like, okay, well, I'm going to call my mom first, talk to her. I'm going to talk to my friends. I'm going to do this. I'm going to wait for my modem to kick in. Cause back in the AOL days, you had the modem that was plugged into the wall. If you wanted to post something on MySpace, you had to wait like 20 minutes for your computer to load.
Get your mom off the phone first.
Exactly. And then she'd be like, why are you on the please? Me and my sisters used to fight, please. But I think that people just are so scared of being canceled, or so scared of what other people think, that they don't want to speak out and they don't want to talk out, because cancel culture is a real thing and it's a scary thing. Because like, imagine saying, I like the color blue. And then all of a sudden, liking the color blue is associated with a particular hate group. Like, they're going to cancel you. And that's kind of silly, because it's literally just the color blue. But at the same time, there's people that love the color blue. They hold it as a very high standard, or even the color pink. So
sorry to jump in. Do you know what's so funny about that?
What
is that? For over a decade, my entire music career, and even prior to me doing music, really, like, purple has always been my brand color.
Nice. Right?
Like my merchandise, my logos. Like I've always had purple. I have a purple van with my name on it. Right. And in the past year, I've had some crazy people on the internet start trying to associate the fact that I like the color purple with some sort of like Illuminati or Freemasonry or devil worship or something like that.
But you would think
I see people online trying to draw these weird connections and saying, oh, look, like he's got like he's wearing purple in this. And like they're trying to connect like the weirdest dots. And we just there's a lot of crazy people out there. And as your profile grows, you come across more and more of them. So okay, that example was just kind of funny to me.
I'm just trying to like associate the color purple with something actually like in a, like, I don't like in a bad. Oh,
there's crazy people who say it's the color of deception.
Okay. That's, so there,
I've read some of their threads and apparently purple is the color of deception. And so I apparently use purple because I'm controlled opposition. They never explain who I'm controlled by. But, okay. And sometimes when I rap, I move my hands. So sometimes they'll like freeze frame a video of me rapping and, you know, my hand is, I don't know, like this. And they're like, look at his hands. And he's got a purple background on Twitter and he's got a lot of followers and he went on Joe Rogan. Illuminati.
So you're part Sicilian then, because we talk with our hands.
Oh, so do Nigerians.
It's a very common thing. Like if you talk with a Sicilian, like if you come to Sunday dinner, we're like, we're literally like this with our hands, and people on TikTok, they're like, why are you moving your hands? I'm like, because that's part of like, I don't know if it's my genetics. It's literally the culture. Like if your Sicilian mother screams at you, you're going to be getting the hand gestures. Like that's what it is. But I feel like people are scared and it's also to herd mentality, and herd mentality is a very, very scary thing. And we're seeing more and more herd mentality happening in 2022 than we did back then, than we did in the 80s and we did in the 90s and we did in the early 2000s. I feel like 2010 was when we started getting that. We started just kind of slowly see some sort of cancel culture forming. And I want to say it started happening after like 2017, because that's when I left my job in healthcare. And that's when we started to see people get really, really upset about everything, like literally everything, anything possible. That's when people got upset. And that's kind of when my job stopped. Not like my job was, I loved what I did, but one of the reasons why I left is because of the long drive. But I worked with most of my clients were gay men, and they were gay men, like Black gay men, white gay men, like Latinos, like people like everywhere, like Middle Eastern, everywhere. But that was most of my client base. And then, of course, we did have some outliers. There were some straight folks, men and women, et cetera. We did have a couple trans folks. So, but I felt like that's when the culture started shifting, like I want to say like 2015. And that's when my company integrated like the sensitivity training and all that type of stuff in, which for what I did for work, I felt that was important to do. That was important to do because we're dealing with that particular population. But some of these companies that are integrating all this other like whatever, it's silly, because you're not necessarily dealing with that population hands on. Like I had 200 to 300 patients I managed every month, and most of that population, they were gay men. So obviously I needed to learn more about the culture to be able to relate to them, because at the end of the day, my job was providing them quality care, and I cannot provide somebody quality healthcare unless I know a little bit about them and their culture. But I feel like 2015, 2017 was the time that we started to really see this cancel culture and the herd mentality. And if you supported Trump, or if you supported Obama, or if you supported this person or that person, then people would start to classify you and put you into groups. Like I had a client scream in my face at work because I said I supported a libertarian candidate, and he absolutely lost his stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, like, a libertarian is like down the middle. Like that should be okay to, you know, if somebody asks you who you're voting for, like you would think that that's okay, but they got so mad. And I'm like, okay, well, I know not to just to say, yeah, I would know to have to redirect the question. Like, who are you voting for? Oh, you're voting for so-and-so. Awesome. That's great.
Yeah. I
support your right to choose who you want to vote for. And I would have to like kind of push the conversation to them so they wouldn't like have meltdowns.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it is that was the turning point? I mean, I think it started kicking off earlier than that, and the seeds have been planted many, many decades ago. But why do you think that mid 2000s, all of this really started getting aggressive and weird, because if we just rewind a decade ago, 2012, sure, the world's never been perfect. There's always been weird things. There's always been conflict and division and issues. That's the story of all human history, no matter what country you're in. But I certainly saw the same thing. I mean, I'm from the UK, you're from the US, but certainly across the Western world in the past 6 to 7 years, there's been a real increase in anger and outrage and people creating false dichotomies everywhere and these false binaries, like your example there, someone hearing you supported a libertarian candidate. Would it be fair for me to assume this person is a left-leaning Democrat or am
I? Yes. They were 100%.
Yeah. So people's inability to see anything. It's either you're for this or you're for the thing I'm for, or you are totally opposed to it and therefore you're a bad person. And it seems like even 10 years ago, people were more nuanced than that. There was less lazy thinking, like just throwing people in this category and, you know, not even being able to have that maturity to agree to disagree, right? I mean, we all have disagreements. There's almost 8 billion people in the world, and there's no two people who agree 100% on absolutely everything. And I feel like my whole life anyway, that was always okay. Sure, it came to head sometimes and there was conflict sometimes, but it wasn't like, you know, I mean, literally this morning as we record this, I mean, I go on Twitter and I'm literally seeing, you know, multiple people like wishing death on people they disagree with politically, right? And just saying it. And you're just looking through the comments and people are like agreeing and you're just, and then you click on this person's profile and, you know, it's hashtag be kind, you know, hashtag, right? And you're just, I'm like, what's going on here? Like that didn't used to be, I know it's still rare, but it's becoming more common.
So this is the thing. And I agree with you. Like we've had seeds planted and things kind of have, and I really feel like a lot of this is the deterioration of the nuclear family. And to be clear, I love both men and women. I think both men and women are beautiful. I think I have to.
And you're also suggesting there's only two.
I am suggesting there's only two.
Uh-oh.
And we can talk about that. And I'm going to explain because I come from a place like I love men and women. I love humans. I think people deserve the right to be happy. And I believe people deserve the right to showcase to, if you don't like somebody, you don't have to deal with them. You don't have to talk to them. But I also feel like you should show some sort of decency to almost every human. The only people that I'm very strong, that I will come out strongly and say completely hats off are pedophiles and rapists. And that's it. Like if you harm a child, I don't care.
Those are fair lines.
Yeah. I mean, those are the only two things that I've got a problem with. And rape goes again for men and women, because that does happen to men too. It's a topic that a whole lot of people don't talk about, but it does happen. Cases in women are more common. But I do believe that seeds are planted. So if you want to have a same-sex marriage and raise your kids and be good parents and not introduce them to weird stuff, people do that and kids come out fine. And I'm not a person to sit here and say, you can't do this, you can't do that. However, if you are actively harming a child, then that's where I kind of draw the line. And I've seen people do not nice things to their kids, like in public where they're screaming and yelling at them, or where I feel like the child's unsafe. And I've stepped in before and been like, hey, is everything okay here? And I've kind of watched and observed to make sure that things were okay, because there's a lot of stuff that happens inside the home. But I feel like, you know, we've started to see the seeds planted for a long time, and that ultimately started with the deterioration of the nuclear family. I do think it is better to have a man and a woman in the household as parents, because you're going to get women are able to provide things that men can't, and men can provide things that women can't. For example, my daughter, when she is in trouble and I reprimand her, she's like, whatever, your mom, whatever. When her dad reprimands her, completely new ball game. She's like, It's where the buck stops. So it's so important to have two parents in the household, preferably a man or a woman. I'm not here to judge anybody else. But I think that kind of started shifting this behavior also too. I think that a lot of people in America will say racism, racism, racism. And you know, that's a fair thing to say. There are those issues that do happen. But at the same time, I feel like it's more of a wealth gap that a lot of people aren't willing to talk about that we're seeing occurring. And that wealth gap happens because it has to do with our public school system in the United States government. Our public school system is not set up to teach critical thinking. Our public school system is set up to showcase basic math, English, history, which if you even want to call that history, because it's so distorted, but where our kids are not being taught to think for themselves, to stand up for themselves, and to have critical thinking. And I think that's where we're seeing a lot of these problems with the herd mentality, because if you don't have humans that are able to critically think and to understand what personal finance is, then you're going to have all these groups of people that remain poor and that remain however it is. And yes, you can break yourself out of those patterns. But again, there's a lot of subgroups, there's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of different things that happens. And that kind of is a longer stemming topic that I'm happy to come on and talk about another time. But I just feel like it kind of started with the school system, with the public school system, that they've just removed so many important aspects. And in the United States, a lot of people don't realize. And you said you grew up in the UK, correct?
I grew up in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
But I have Saudi Arabia and the UK.
Question for you. What subjects were you taught were hit heavy on in Saudi Arabia when you were growing up?
So in Saudi Arabia, I was in the American school system. I went to an international school. So I was in the American school system from kindergarten to fifth grade. And then when I was 11 years old, I went to boarding school in the UK and transitioned out the American system into the British one. Primary subjects. I mean, first thing I'll say is the school I went to in Saudi was great. You know, I rip on public schools myself, and I mean, the school I went to wouldn't technically really be a public school in the truest sense, because it's kind of weird to get into. But in terms of subjects, it was maths, science, English, geography.
Was math
social, what they called social studies, which was kind of history.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Was math and were the STEM subjects, math and science primarily, were those hit hard?
Hit hard in what way?
Were those emphasized?
Because, a lot of focus, yeah.
Yeah, because in Los Angeles school system, and from what I know from the public school system in California, math and science are not, we don't focus on them. We focus on arts and different types of social things. They're not, and I know for a fact, because when I worked in healthcare, I worked alongside like doctors and pharmacists, people that are really, really smart. And most of them were immigrants. Most of them came from Russia or from Georgia or from India or from in all these other countries. But there's, especially in Russia, their schools hit so hard on math. So hard on math. So when I remember I wanted to become a pharmacist. And if you want to become a pharmacist, you have to do a lot of math classes. Math is not my strong suit at all. Any way, shape, or form. And that's okay, because we're all different. But I remember asking for help, like tutoring from the pharmacist on staff or the doctor that was on staff, like, can you help me solve this? And they're like, well, this is how we do it in Russia, or this is how we do it in Pakistan, or this is how we do it in India. So they're taught very heavily to critical think, because math teaches you critical thinking. It really does, because you have to figure, because math is hard, and you have to figure out how to solve specific problems and to do
specific
things. It's also
objective.
Exactly. So we don't have that in the United States. If you want to get that in the United States, you have to pay a lot of money to get it, because our public schools, even though we pay a lot of money in tax dollars and they're funded by taxpayers, our public servants, for some reason, can't seem to figure it out and provide a school system that is similar to what they're learning in China, in Asia, in Saudi Arabia, wherever else in the country. And that's a big problem, too, because we're so focused in America on aesthetics and social and history than we are math. And realistically, every single major in school, you have to have some sort of math background to fully navigate and get ahead. And that's why we have so many people coming to the United States that are able to get in all these great schools, like for STEM and for healthcare, because they have this strong math background. And this is doing actually a disservice to the United States people, because a lot of people that are very smart in math, their minds work differently than some of us that are smart in like social skills. Like I have really good social skills, but I'm not the best in math. And I saw doctors and pharmacists that came from other places be super smart in math, but didn't know how to treat patients because they didn't have those social skills, because those weren't hit heavily on growing up. So it makes no sense the way our system is set up in the United States. But I think that's why we have this cancel culture. And that's why I feel like there's a shift of things that have changed since 2010 or 2015 or even prior to that.
Did there used to be more of a focus on math and science in the past? Is that something that's changed just over the course of our lifetime? Because I don't know all that much, honestly, about the American school system. And I see bits and pieces about what's going on right now. But when I think back to, you know, myself being in school, whether, you know, both at an American school and then a private British school, you know, the experience I had was good, and it was positive. And there wasn't all the weird indoctrination stuff. It was much more academic focused across the board. You know, I did art and music as well, but I think art and music classes, I want to say, were like once or twice a week. And then the basic stuff, the maths, English, all that, that was pretty much every single day. And then when I went to the UK, I'd say it was even, there was even more focus on those, and science was broken up and split into three subjects: biology, physics, and chemistry. And I remember when I went into the UK system, I was a little bit behind on math. And then there was more focus put on it. But I don't know, is that something that's changed in the USA in terms of the public school curriculum?
From what my mom has told me, she said that the school, like the way the schools were set up back, like in the 60s, 70s, were so much different. They were like, you actually had to work really, really hard. And she said, like, not everybody was cut out for college. The only people that went to college were those that were actually intelligent enough to go, like book-wise, because they wouldn't accept you. Like today, you can literally go to a community college, which is fine. Like people could do whatever they want to do. I'm not judging. But she said that if you wanted to go to college, you had to be smart. Like people that graduated from college back then, you had to be really, really smart. And she said that the type of studies that we have today are like, they're super easy. They're super chill. Like my daughter, she does go to private school for that reason, because I do. Yeah. And it's a STEM focused school. And because I do want her to get that education, because I know how important math is. But it has changed, and it keeps eroding and eroding and eroding. Our class sizes get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's like for example, LA County, we have so much money, but our schools are literally like 3 to 7 stars. There's some outliers there, and these are out of 10. There's some outliers where they're 9 or 8, but those are really expensive, super, super expensive neighborhoods. You're not gonna be able to get a home there for under $1 million, which most people can't afford that. So I do think that is a problem that we're seeing, as we're focused, the United States likes to focus more on social stuff than it does actual education.
Yeah, absolutely. Switching the subject a little bit, Wendy, how do you think becoming a mother has changed your perspective? Because I know that's something that's very important to you. It's something you talk about a lot. And how do you think that shapes and alters your perspective on a lot of things?
As the day that I became a mom, well, first, I planned to have my daughter. It was very important because I used to party. I used to have a lot of fun. But one of the things that I was like super adamant about, I am not getting pregnant until I do X, Y, and Z. There's particular things that I needed to do as a person, because I wanted to make sure I had a safe environment for my daughter. And plus I wanted to pick the correct partner too. I was really worried and nervous about, you know, because, you know, you hear these horror stories of couples that are together, they split, or there's all these crazy things that happen. I did not want that for my daughter. I wanted her, like, whatever happens between me and her dad, that's, you know, that's our business, that's us. But I wanted to make sure it was in a controlled environment, to where there was boundaries set and things were going to be okay, that she had, like, you know, we were at a particular place financially. So we planned for her. We had her, and I used to be like, you know, I've always been like just kind of super chill and whatever. But now as a parent, like there's things that I'm more strict on. Like I see all this stuff that comes out in the news, like about women, about transgenderism, about women's rights, about inequality between women. And before, I didn't really care about that. I was like, you know, cause I grew up with a lot of guy friends. Most of my friends were musicians, and I was always like the homie, like the friend that would come and hang out or whatever. And so they treated me like one of the guys. But then after I had my daughter, I started noticing differences in society about that. And I was like, okay, well, because I have a daughter, I need to let my voice be heard. And I need to make sure I stand up for particular things, because if I don't stand up and if I don't say anything, then this type of stuff is going to continue to happen. And then she's going to think that this is okay. And that's not okay. Like, I don't dress provocatively online. You're not going to, like, sometimes I'll post selfies and stuff like that, but I don't dress super provocative. And one of the reasons why, I have a daughter, and she looks back and she's like, mommy looks like a whore. Then I don't, I don't want her like if I have my like my behind or my things out too much, like, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm a woman. I want to feel sexy. Women like that attention. But at the same time, I try to do it as tastefully as possible. And I think before I post, is this going to like, is she going to see this and say, mm-hmm. oh, my God, you know, like, you know, this is, makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, people could do whatever they want. It's their business. But that's something for me that's important. And sure. I also like to, you know, there are differences in gender, but there's certain things that I really care about now. And I used to think, oh, okay, like boys treat girls the same, like we're all friends, blah, blah, blah. That's not the case now. There are differences that do happen. And, you know, for the most part, I believe that people should be treated equal, but in reality, not everybody in society feels that way. And I do have to be aware of that as a woman, especially when I'm doing business in a very male dominated space. And mm-hmm. for me, it's important to kind of teach my daughter about that stuff as the time arises, but make sure I'm teaching her this stuff, not some random person I don't know teaching her. And that's another thing too, is like one of the reasons why she goes to private school that is a Christian school. I'm not super religious, but at the same time, I think that religion can be a positive thing for a lot of people, whether you believe in crystals, whether you believe in a God, whether you believe in manifesting universe, whatever it is, but some foundation is important for people to kind of believe in, to change your mindset. So I want to make sure that she's in a safe environment that's going to promote like positivity, growth, and intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I'm very like when I see all this crazy stuff in the news, I'm just like, it really rubs me the wrong way, especially with, and I'm just going to come out and say it. The thing that bothers me the most as a woman is seeing transgender women participate in, or I don't even like seeing them participate in women's sports and think that that's okay. And think that they're winning, that they're succeeding. It's actually very detrimental and dangerous to women. Very, very detrimental and dangerous. A lot of people might not know this, but the leading cause of death in women, like the last 50, 60 years up until recently, was childbirth. Mm-hmm. That says a lot, like on the difference in biology, literally by giving life. Because, you know, men are a part of the childbirth process also because they help, you know, they're there to help create. Mm-hmm. But women are taking more of a risk because we're carrying this child in our body. And the fact that women's health is still not where it needs to be, but we're here and we're allowing people to participate in women's sports. And we think that that's okay. We think that it's being inclusive. It's not being inclusive. It's actually canceling women, and it's destroying everything that every single woman in the past history have fought for, what, regardless of their background or their race. Like, you know, there's been different struggles for different cultures and for different people, different races. But at the same time, at the end of the day, we're all women, and we're all here to be women. And I feel mm-hmm. like this whole thing that we're seeing in the media, and that this is okay and people are accepting it, is actually very dangerous to women. Very, very dangerous to women, because I'm also a boxer. I'm a female boxer. I do mm-hmm. not compete, but let's say I wanted to compete in the ring with you. let's face it, you're gonna win. You will win 100%. I might be able to get a lick in, one or two in, maybe. Mm-hmm. For me to knock you down, I would have to catch you really well in the chin, over here or up here. And I would have mm-hmm. to throw my whole entire like spirit.
And you, and you'd also need to not catch one.
I would need to not catch one. I would have to get out of the way. And my footwork is not the best. Okay. So, but at the same time, let's think of it this way. I'm with a man in a relationship. Mm-hmm. We get into a domestic dispute. He mm-hmm. hits me. That's illegal, but mm-hmm. it's legal for a woman and a transgendered man to be in the ring and for that person to hit me. That's mm-hmm. legal. That's it. Like, that's some really kinky stuff. Like, it's not okay. And no. I need to speak out about it, because what happens if my daughter decides that she wants to be a boxer? Mm-hmm. Boxing is great for mental health. It's great therapy. It is a great physical activity. I think it's an amazing tool that really helped me break a lot of the stress and the trauma that I had faced in the past. But as if she wants to become a boxer, but part mm-hmm. of her becoming a boxer is getting in the ring with a boy.
Yes.
I'm not okay with a man hitting my woman or my daughter. If a man hits my daughter, I'm going to go to that guy's house and he's going to keep, you know, I'm going to, there's a different type of rage that's involved with you mess with my kid. Mama bear comes out, you know, but how is that okay? And I think, like, we see all this stuff in the media, and it's actually really sad to see that women are essentially being erased. Our healthcare is not, the fact that our healthcare is not where it's supposed to be, and we're told we don't have veins in our or we don't have nerves in our cervix, and that we don't feel pain there. The fact that we don't have,
I'm not familiar with that.
Apparently, I've had there's there's doctors that have told women, because when you get the IUD, they put it into your cervix. Apparently there's no nerve endings there. And so you shouldn't feel pain, but it's actually a very painful process.
Okay.
Sometimes, and I'll be a little bit graphic here, sometimes putting a tampon is, it can be painful at times. Like,
that's and people. Not surprising. I would assume that it could be for sure.
Well, I mean, so for example, topics like that are not discussed a whole lot. Like we really, women's health, like a woman being on her period is very, very taboo. Most men aren't comfortable speaking about it. And sometimes it's a cultural thing, but that's okay. But the fact that women's health is not prioritized first, but we're so focused on allowing men to compete against women and women's health not being where it needs to be, that's a problem to me. It's very problematic because I had a very traumatic experience during my childbirth with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like we need to kind of prioritize what happens. If somebody wants to transition to a woman, great. I support you. That's fine. But you still should not be able to compete against a woman. Your genealogy is way better and you're going to win.
Yeah. Man, there's so many interesting potential directions to go on this one. I don't even know where to begin on this. I mean, again, it's so odd to me because we're living in this very strange time in the modern Western world, like I said before, where common sense has become uncommon. One of the most basic and fundamental objective truths of reality, this isn't just for human beings, but it goes across the animal kingdom, is that males and females are different. Boys and girls are different. Men and women are different. And I think it's important, the second part, and that's fine and that's good. And I think the word equality gets bastardized a lot because it has a lot of meanings. It's actually a very semantically overloaded word because equality means a lot of things. I mean, are all human beings equal? In one sense, yes, from a sort of religious or spiritual or even legal perspective, yes, everyone's life is of equal value. We should treat everyone's life as if they have equal value. And that's the basis actually of even our legal systems and a lot of morality and ethics, right? But in another sense, as we all know and acknowledge, even by using terms like diversity or just existing in real life, human beings are very unequal. We're unequal in all sorts of ways, from height to weight to appearance to everything, personality. We think differently. We act differently. Y'all have different characters. No two people in the world are actually identical. Even identical twins have differences in their personalities and in their preferences. So even the most visually equal people in the world are very different. And it's weird. And I think this gets corrupted a lot when we're talking about gender dynamics. And I think this has been this sort of battle and confusion that's been raging on for decades, where people are pushing equal to this. I don't even know the way to put it, right? We're supposed to simultaneously, it gets confusing because it seems like in modern society, you're supposed to believe that men and women are the same, but different, but also neither one exists and they're social constructs.
Do you want to know why we have that in 2022?
Tell me.
It's a wealth gap. It's inflation. Okay. It's a wealth gap. It's inflation. It is the way money has evolved. And the reason why, if you look at families back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe 80s, and of course, there was a lot of racial inequality that occurred back then too. So I'm not taking that out of account. I'm just giving like a generalized statement. A man and a woman got married. Mm-hmm. A man was able to go to work, even at, you know, maybe earning a wage that was a little bit more than minimum wage. He was able to pay for food, shelter, clothing for his family and his kids. Mm-hmm. Now, if both parents are not working, you can't live. In California, in LA County, you can't even to rent a room. It's like $1,000 a month to rent a room. And like, even in the hood, forget it. Like, houses are still $500,000 in the hood, $600,000 in the hood. And that's a mortgage payment of like close to $3,000. Who can afford that on making $20 an hour? So to me, part of these issues that are occurring and putting women back in the workforce, which at the same time, another belief that I have, gender dynamics can be whatever, like, can be whatever a couple wants them to be, whatever a couple is comfortable with. Like, they say that there's a person for everybody. So you simply find somebody that you're attracted to, that person is attracted to you, and you guys kind of have similar beliefs. Okay, like, you want to be the breadwinner and I'll stay at home with the kids, or vice versa. Great. But I do think we do need one parent at home, however you want to put that. And at the same time, we shouldn't tell people that needs to be the man or the woman. Let each couple figure that out, because it's not our damn business. It's not. But realistically, the way money has evolved in the United States has made it so that we need to have two parents working instead of one. And it is very important to have a caretaker at home for the family. And the cool thing about, I guess, gender dynamics or whatever, is that you have the provider that's out there working, bringing money home. The person that's staying home can then take that money to budget, buy food, pay the mortgage, whatever it is, and make sure the family is taken care of. The family is so, so important, because we need to procreate to produce, not only for our lineage, but also the world needs to be populated. Mm-hmm. And we need somebody, like, who's going to watch those kids?
It's a full-time job for somebody.
It is a full-time job. And that's why it's important to have, you know, somebody that's working or somebody that's staying home. If you want to work, like, I work, me and her dad, we both work. And that's our business. That's what we do. And that's what works for us. I get to work from home. And, but there's somebody that's always there for her. And I think that that's probably the biggest problem in America, is the wealth gap, which is due to the government and due to inflation and due to all of these things.
Do you think it's intentional?
Of course it is.
Okay.
It's easier to keep people poor than it is to have them thrive. If they wanted people to thrive, they would teach personal finance at school. I didn't learn personal finance in school. I didn't learn what APR was. I didn't learn what APY is. I didn't know how long it would take me to pay debt off. When I went to college, they says you need to take out student loans. I was like, I was in community college because I was kind of a mess when I was younger, and I started community college later. So when I went back to school, they're like, okay, well, you need to finish in 2 years. And I was like, I can't finish in 2 years. I have to have a full-time job. They're like, well, you just take a loan out and you go to a four-year university. And I'm like, so you want me to take out a $40,000, $60,000 loan, $100,000, whatever it was, to go to a university, which I don't even know what major I want to major in, and I need to pay this debt back? And they literally were throwing, they would, like, you know when you go to a strip club and you make it rain? And that's what I felt.
I don't personally know, but yeah.
Well, they're fun.
I've seen rap videos.
They're fun. You go to a strip club and you make it rain with the dollar bills. Well, you go into the counselor's office senior year of high school or community college, and they're doing this with you with the damn college applications. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. And they're literally pushing this debt upon you, and they're not telling you. And that's why there's so many people that are so mad about all this debt that they have, because they took out debt because they didn't learn about what debt was in school or money was. So it is cheaper for the government to keep you dependent on them. Now, all these people that in the United States that have all these crazy student loans, they are now dependent on the government to pay these loans off for them, or to get some sort of government funding to assist with that, or because they simply can't breathe, they simply can't eat, because they have all, they're literally drowning in debt. And that's the system that the United States of America has created for us, and it is moving in a socialist direction, which some people want. I personally don't want. I want to go out and go get the bacon every day. I want to go out, I want to get the bread, I want to bring it home, I want to thrive, I want to show my daughter to take initiative as well. And it is easier to keep people dumb and stupid.
Man, I have so many thoughts on this. I could write an entire book on this topic that would certainly upset a lot of people. It's weird because, like, with these sort of topics, sometimes I, like, on a daily basis, I flip-flop multiple times between wondering whether not just the USA, but the modern Western world and culture can be saved and salvaged. And also I flip-flop on whether or not it deserves to be, because I think that, like, people have largely created a lot of this mess themselves, individually and collectively. I know that as human beings, everybody always wants to blame something, right?
The government, the system, this group of people, that group. It is hard to take responsibility for yourself, though.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think also, though, collectively, sociopolitically and culturally, a lot of the issues that we're discussing, this was the inevitable consequence of a lot of things that people advocated for just a matter of decades ago. Not all of it, but a lot of it. And sure, people don't necessarily practice second, third, fourth order thinking and consider, okay, if this is done here, you know, the stuff that's going on right now in 2022, what's going to be the impact for that when your daughter is 25 years old, right? A lot of people don't think of that. They're doing, this goes for social issues, cultural issues, financial issues, the economy, all kinds of things. People do things in the here and now and often are going by emotion and what feels good at the time. And they're not thinking, okay, later down the line for the country, for the people, for individuals, what does this mean? And I think a lot of what we're seeing now is stuff from, whether it's from the 90s or the 80s or the 70s or the 60s, certain things were put in place. And then, you know, sure, there can be, because the truth is everything, most things are always trade-offs. There aren't many things that are all positive or all negative. Normally it's a trade-off, especially if you're talking about policies. If you put in a governmental policy which promotes this thing, there might be a trade-off here. There might be some downside here. You do this thing, it has consequences. Oh, you want to lock down a country and lock down the economy and the people for a year? I get ready for inflation, get ready for mental health issues, get ready for missed cancer diagnosis, get ready for children missing out on school and for their development, right? You want to make everyone wear masks for 2 years. Everyone's like, oh, well, you know, there's no downside to wearing a mask. And I'm like,
there is.
Are you serious? Of course there's a downside. But people don't really do a lot of thinking.
And that has to do with the public school system, because we are not taught critical thinking in our public schools.
How much of that should be, I mean, I'll ask you this because you're a parent, obviously, but where do you think, this is another big question, is how much responsibility lies with the parents versus the government? What should the government be teaching and what should be an education versus what should be left to the parent? I think that's actually the crux of a lot of the debates going on now, right? Like what are the things that parents, it's the responsibilities on parents to teach their kids about these things and the responsibility. Because if you're talking about public schools, you're talking about the state, you're talking about the government. And it's, I was actually going to tweet yesterday about questioning the wisdom of sending your child. If you know that, you know, there's a lot of people who see a lot of these problems and they're unhappy with the curriculum and the things that are going on. And especially at university, actually, I'd say especially university, because that people spend a lot of money on that. And it's like, why would you spend tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars for your child to, let's be real, to be brainwashed, right? To be brainwashed to hate you and hate their country and to come out and be in debt and to be in a worse off position than maybe they were 3 or 4 years ago. And people are still repeating that whilst complaining about the problem. And I'm like, well, maybe you should look at other options. Maybe that worked when you were growing up, but maybe that's not the best way to do it now.
So there was actually a law that they were trying to pass in California, I want to say 20 years ago. And it was basically, instead, like, you still have to pay your taxes because taxpayer dollars go to fund schools, which is, please don't get me started. But what they wanted to do was you still pay your taxes. But what they did was, is they refunded the parent. Like, if you had a child, regardless if they went to public school or private school, because you have to pay property taxes, you have to pay all these taxes that go to school. But what they were going to do was give a refund check to the families every year, those that had children, and then the parents could decide whether they want where they wanted to put their kids for school, so they can use that money to cover some private school tuition. And this would also remove public schools to where they're not free, because the parents would have that voucher to pay, and it would cover enough cost to where for particular public schools or whatever it was. But the cool thing about it is I think that they should actually do it, refund some of the money back to the parents, let the parents decide where they want to send the kids. And that would actually push positive production and competition between schools, because the schools would be like, oh, well, we don't have enough kids attending, so we're not going to get these funds. And instead of automatically giving schools funds for doing the bare minimum, the literal bare minimum, you have they would actually see, okay, well, they have higher enrollments here, and they're great. Their levels are higher in math or English or whatever it is. So maybe we need to focus on this and improve this. So that was a really cool thing that they introduced. But of course, California, they said no, they shot it down.
Yeah.
But as far as what should be taught in school, and I'm going to give two scenarios here, because this is something that happens a lot when you're talking to folks that come from poverty. I personally believe in schools that they should focus on math, science, some history. Like that's another really hard topic to discuss, because the people will debate this happened, this didn't happen. And it's like, what, you know, what is real, what isn't real. And that also kind of goes into folklore, because like in my family, being, you know, Sicilian Jew, I learned a lot of things from both sides about oppression or about, you know, different things that happen, because my family just didn't come to America to come to America. They came for reasons, you know? So I feel like, you know, the topics that should be focused on the most, or maybe trade schools, like teaching a kid how to trade, like, or to like a trade, home ec. They removed home ec, which is so silly, because learning how to sew and learning how to cook is both something that boys and girls need to learn, and everybody in between, because who's gonna make food for you? If not, you're gonna go to McDonald's.
Everybody's got to eat. Yeah,
exactly. So I feel like they should focus on the core things, like the core, like physical activity, physical activity, personal finance, math, science, biology, you know, light history, and maybe, you know, bit like a business class, and maybe like light social skills, like depending. Yeah. But then people are like, well, what about sex ed? That's important. And I'm gonna give two scenarios here. Sex ed, the sex talk should be mainly done in the household with families. Mm-hmm. But then there's another talk that goes, some families, some parents, some kids are not born with the same, all parents are not created equal. So you might have kids from a household of a particular culture, of a particular religion, of a particular wealth, where the parents aren't teaching them about what a vagina is, what a penis is, like that type of stuff. So it's like, who's going to help educate these kids or talk to them about STDs? STDs are a big, big problem. So who's going to help talk to those kids? So for me as a parent, I don't mind having light sex ed in schools. Like when my daughter turns, I think when I went to school, they integrated that in fifth grade. And then we had it again in like 10th grade. So if it's like basic stuff, like, you know, this is what an STD is, this is what pregnancy is, this is what, you know, these are female organs, these are male organs. And I feel like if it just kept like super basic, I don't see an issue with that. I don't mind my daughter learning about that, because it is important. Yeah. But at the same time, they're bringing in all this weird stuff that doesn't need to be
ideological.
And the thing is like, I am a big hag. Like big hag. I've been a hag since I have been 13 years old. I have a lot
hag?
Of games.
What's a hag?
A hag is actually
Okay.
I can't say that.
No, I know what it is. It rhymes.
I can't say the first part because you get canceled.
British word for cigarette.
Yeah, I can't say it because you get canceled now, but my friends, like they are
you can,
like
you can say it in England.
This is my blah, my bleep hag. Like when we go out, okay. This is my bleep hag. That's what they refer to me as. I don't say it because I'm not trying to get canceled, but that's what they call me. And like sometimes big, why, you know, like whatever, but my gay friends feel the same exact way I do. They just happen to like men. They just happen to be with a man, but they don't want their kids around that stuff. They don't want their kids learning about all this crazy stuff. And it's like, I've had my gay friends come around my daughter and they just act like regular people. They're not being super sexual. They're not being weird. They're just people. And they, you know, whatever. It's not like, it's not weird. Like it's not, I feel like what we see in the media is not what real life is. Cause all of my gay friends, they're just like, they come over, we have dinner together. They come to family parties and it's just cool. And everybody like chills and hangs out, but they feel the same.
I've made this point many times on both my podcast and also on my social media, which is that what is called the LGBT movement or LGBTQIAA2SP+, whatever the heck the acronym is these days. I draw quite a line between gay people and the LGBT movement/agenda. I do not think they are remotely one and the same thing. Of course, there's naturally some overlap there, but the movement, especially because the T honestly has taken over the rest of it, like the LG and the B, like people don't even, it's all about the T now, right? The T has totally taken
and
over
the
rest
thing
of it.
Is like,
and it's not, okay, go ahead.
I have to say something. Like my friends and like my clients, they were like, one of my clients was the second oldest HIV positive male in the United States. So that means he contracted it very, very early and lived through everything. He was in basements being pumped with all kinds of drugs, all kinds of crazy stuff. He knew literally everybody from way back then. But the thing is they were so proud to be gay men, or so proud to be women were so proud to be lesbians or whatever it was, that they fought so hard for them to be treated with decency. And I feel like it's upsetting for a lot of the old school folks that were actually there out there putting in the work, pushing through positive legislation, making sure that the HIV community got healthcare and got help with that. That it's kind of sucks for them because they put all this work in, and now we have all these groups of people that are they're extremists is really what it is, that they're pushing all these extreme things, and it's taking away their struggle. It's taking away their strife. It's taking away their history, everything that they worked for.
I think it's also turning people against it.
It is.
I'll be real, right? Like, I think even with the T aspect, right? Like transgenderism, trans people, whatever, like most people, whether they're like in the West anyway, this is not necessarily global, but in the West, most vast majority of people, even conservative people, conservative, liberal, centrist, libertarian, most people don't really care, right? They may have their personal or moral or religious objections to certain things. But if you are an adult, at this stage in time, most people don't care. But what's happening is people are being forced to care because of this encroachment, right? Because of this encroachment on women's sports, the encroachment into women's spaces, the absolute denial of biological realities, the pushing, trying to force certain things and indoctrinate very young children into certain things. That is causing people who previously were just like apathetic, live and let live, laissez-faire, whatever. I think it's actually, I would not be surprised if someone were to poll people on like their thoughts on the LGBT movement or even LGBT people and find that it has gone backwards over the last couple years. It wouldn't shock me at all, because as we were saying, and this is unfortunate because you should always judge people as individuals, but when people are constantly being battered and hit over the head every single day with all this stuff, and it's starting to encroach on them, it makes them, people are reactionary. It makes people push back the other way. And I also wonder, and I say this as someone who grew up in the Middle East and someone whose family background is originally from, Nigeria and Africa as a whole continent, like is not down with homosexuality. Okay. Needless to say. And I often wonder, this is a relatively new thought, but I've been wondering, I wonder if the reasonable gay rights movements in developing countries and treatment of homosexual people in those countries is now potentially being severely negatively impacted by what is going on in the West. Right? Because if you go back to the 90s, if you go back to the 80s, you go back further, right? Especially from conservatives, right? The concern was always the slippery slope, right? It was always that, if we allow this, it's going to descend into this, right? You know, just 10 years ago, it was like, look, the gay people just want to get married, right? That was the whole thing. Again, live and let live. Look, people love who they love. Let these people get married. And you know, from the movement itself, they were like, that's all we want. And then eventually, sure, that was a long battle, but people were like, okay, you know, fair enough. And people generally have kind of accepted that, whether or not they have moral objections from a legal perspective, they're kind of like, okay, fair enough. And then in less than a decade, you've now got people saying that women are a social construct and that men can menstruate and can get pregnant and that little children should be put on hormones or have surgeries or whatever. So I wonder if all of that, because, you know, the world is so interconnected. I wonder if people in the Middle East and in Africa and certain parts of Asia and South America, I wonder if they're seeing all this and they're like, okay, we've seen where this is leading to. So we absolutely cannot let this stuff fly. I wonder if that's actually happening.
It probably is happening, because what a lot of people do not understand is that people come to America to most of the time they come to America to escape turmoil, or at least that's what used to happen. And that's why we have a border crisis now. Well, to some people would argue something differently, is because people from Latin American countries want to come over here because it is a better quality of life. That's fine. Fantastic. Like, that's a separate topic. But people come here for a better quality of life. And if you're coming to a country for a better quality of life, but then telling that country how to dictate and what to tell other people what they need to do, why didn't you, if you feel so passionately about this, why didn't you stay home and do this in your household and instead of coming here and upsetting other people? Like, I love people. I want people to come. I want them to be free. I want them to live their life just as long as they're good, decent people. But you can't come home, or you can't come to somebody else's home, to their turf. Like, can you imagine being somewhere like me on the streets? Would I realize if you're going to go down a street that you don't live on, that you don't hang out on, you don't know the people there, you come in there and you start telling people you need to do this, this, and this? That's not going to end well. That doesn't go over well. Nobody is going to go in some of the traps in LA and tell other people what they need to do. You're going to try to come in, you're going to turn around, you're going to leave because they're not going to take it kindly. But people literally come here and do that. And I just don't understand. It's like, if you feel so strongly about this, why didn't you stay home and express your opinion there? Because other countries, and especially Americans, don't realize, like, one of the things Americans fail to do is really understand cultures of other people outside of America, like outside of maybe Sicilian Americans or African Americans or Asian Americans or whatever it may be. They're just
as
like,
long
okay,
it's American.
If it's American, like, Americans are Americans, and our cultures are very, like, even though there's, like, obviously differences, but they're kind of, you know, we all kind of want the same things, do the same things. But when you're talking about, like, somebody that's from Africa or somebody that's from Asia or from China or from Mexico, their cultures are very, very different, very, yes, very different. Their beliefs are very, very different. So you're not going to act the same that you're going to act in the United States and bring it elsewhere. And that's one of the reasons why I haven't traveled to the Middle East, is because I don't know enough about the culture yet. Am I going to be safe there? I have tattoos. Do I need to dress a particular type of way? I want to make sure if I'm going to leave the country or I'm going to go into somebody else's home, I'm going to come with respect. Because if I don't come there with respect and have this entitled personality, well, I'm American, I can do whatever I want to do. No. Because I've been in trap houses and I've been down the streets where you go down there and they will. I've been in the old neighborhood I used to live in. I went to the grocery store and I got hit up by gang members. They're like, where are you from? And I'm like, I live right down the street. They're like, well, da 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 da. And I was like, well, I live here. I own a home here. So I need to do my grocery shopping. They're like, okay, respect. And they let me go. You have to be very careful where you go and what you do. And a lot of people are so entitled in the United States, regardless if they immigrated here or whatever it is, that they think they can push people around and force people to do what they want to do. And it's not the case. You cannot do that. And I feel like we're so entitled. We feel like everything should be given to us, especially this new generation, that it's just, that's not reality. It's not the way it works in other countries.
Yeah. And another thing leading on from that, I totally agree with what you said there. I think another thing is people forget how new a lot of stuff is. People forget that. So, for example, when people are looking at, you know, let's take Saudi Arabia, because it's a very controversial country to a lot of Westerners, and it's somewhere that I lived for 2 decades. So, you know, I think I have more clout.
But you're not Saudi Arabian. You can't talk about it.
Oh, yeah. You know. So people often forget how recent certain aspects of progress have been. So look, if you go back, let's go back 100 years, 1922, USA, 1922, right? Like, in that short time frame, that's one long lifetime, but so much has changed, right? A lot positive, as we've already mentioned. There have certainly been some downsides and some excesses, but overall, society, in terms of, if we're going to talk about, like, the way people treat each other and treat people of different groups and persuasions, race, ethnicity, sexuality, gender, things have progressed at a phenomenal speed. And I think sometimes that is not appreciated properly in two ways. Number one, I think that people can be way too sort of judgmental of other nations and countries and societies, where it's just like, oh, well, you know, we do this, and so, you know, they should do that. I'm like, bro, like, you've only had that for a decade or like a couple decades. Like, you don't need to go back very far in U.S. history to see, you know, vicious racism or to see vicious homophobia or to see, you know, all these other things, like real versions too, like not the nonsense that a lot of people worry about these days, real white supremacy, right? Like real stuff. And so I think that it can cause people to be just kind of have like weird expectations, I guess, of other places, and that entitlement mentality as well. And they themselves aren't even realizing, well, even where you're from, this isn't something like that's been around for centuries, let alone millennia. Like it's new. So, you know, give stuff some time. But I also think that people don't, there's a lot of things I think Americans don't properly appreciate about the US and Westerners don't appreciate about the West in general. But I think also, you know, people are not appreciative enough of just how, as many problems as they are, and we're discussing a lot of the problems in society, things are also so good and so prosperous, and there's so much money and opportunity and relative fairness and equality and decent treatment of people and good infrastructure and stuff working. And because the truth is most Americans have never left the country, right? So
or their cities.
Yeah, so it's not surprising that people don't have this sense of perspective and gratitude. But I think actually if people were to just kind of look at history, I mean, World War II was only 80 years ago. That was a pretty bad time. And look at how much progress has been made in that one person's lifetime. It's like, man, like that's something to be celebrated. And, you know, instead of always condemning and wanting to deconstruct and dismantle and, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, it's like, look, we can acknowledge history and we can acknowledge these issues and we can also acknowledge issues in the present, but we should also balance it with this sense of like, yo, what we're doing right now here, Wendy, is magical, right? I don't know how many miles away from each other, thousands of miles away from each other, talking in real time. I can see you. You can see me. We're here in HD. We can share this conversation with thousands of people across the entire globe. And we're doing this for essentially for free. And we have access to this and access to that. And all of that is amazing. Like if any of our ancestors could see what we're doing, they would think this is some form of witchcraft or magic.
And on top of it, I'm a woman and you're a man. This might not have been allowed 50 years ago.
True. Black man as well. Black man.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
That well, too hey, as well. No, but that too as well, right? Like on two levels.
If you call my mother a white woman, she'll say I'm Sicilian, even though she's white skin. Yeah. So, okay, but back then they were treated absolutely terrible. Like my grandma got beat in school because she had a Sicilian accent. And you can't hit kids anymore, which is amazing. That's progress. But this conversation probably would not have been appropriate 50 years ago.
No, on multiple levels. And that's something to be grateful for. So I think it's really important to have that balance. It's something I try to do. Sometimes overall, like my message is always really positive. And even when I'm being critical, I'm often critical because I'm very aware and conscious of how good and special and unique this is. And I recognize that billions of people across the world do not have this, and billions of people who came before us absolutely did not have any of this. And I'm just like, guys, let's not ruin it. You know, like let's not go so far in the overcorrection that you end up regressing backwards and losing all of these gains that were made over the past couple of decades. And that's why I do get angry when I'm seeing like this complete, you know, massive infringements on freedom and liberty over the past couple of years, or I'm seeing, you know, men entering women's sports and smashing them up and people trying to completely deny basic biological realities and the truth itself. And you're seeing people trying to invert this and change that and cause these problems in the economy. And it's just like, guys, like things are not perfect, but it's pretty good. So like, can we all be a little more cautious and a little more careful with how we treat each other and the way that we use our systems and our institutions and all that, and not just kind of barrel off this cliff where we end up in this situation where 10 years from now, or even 5 years from now, things are worse than they were before. And I do feel like 2022 is worse than, I don't know, 2018 or 2019. I think we've gone backwards over the last couple of years in the entire Western world. I think we've gone backwards. You know, we have less freedom. We have less equality. You have people advocating segregation. You were just telling me you wanted to go to a restaurant and you couldn't enter a restaurant in LA, right? I mean, like, think of that. Like, this is the thing. People even, that's unfathomable. We haven't even, that conversation has not existed in our lifetime until
People don't like to bring the Holocaust up into it, but really they separated people.
They did it
based on specific things. And I know some people get mad about it, but they did. And I was almost not here because my family literally survived that and came to the United States. Mm-hmm. And because my dad passed when I was young. So some of the things that stuck with me were what he taught me verbally about what happened to my ancestors. Mm-hmm. And my dad was a very, very proud Jewish man, very, very proud. Bar mitzvah, everything. And he was like, we always celebrated the Jewish holidays, even though, like, you know, he wasn't super, super religious, but he was a proud Jewish man, because over time, you know, sometimes religion dissipates and whatnot. But we always learned about that stuff. And I read some of the things, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is like, you're really just forcing people apart. And I feel like when you remove, the best way to remove power from people is to control them. And you do that by pitting low IQ people against each other, or people that are not educated enough. And people feel powerful when they're part of a herd, because standing alone, being a lone wolf is hard. I prefer to do a lot of my work, a lot of my business alone, because I don't trust a lot of people, because I am a public figure. And it's easier to be with a herd because you feel more comfortable, you feel more confident, you move different. But when you're by yourself and you're struggling by yourself and you're building by yourself, it is a completely uncomfortable. It is like you're suspended in full air, and you're like, where am I going? Because you don't have anybody pulling you either direction or holding you together. You're just like floating. But when you're with a herd of people, you have all these people. It's you in this big group of people, like a bubble, and you're just kind of floating together. So if you start to feel uncomfortable, you get bounced back this way or bounced back this way.
I've just had a thought that I've never had before. I don't often get these breakthroughs in the middle of a podcast or towards the end of a podcast, but I've just had an interesting thought about the herd and why the herd is so attractive. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone make this point. When you're in a herd, it dissipates the responsibility for wrongdoing or failure, but it also allows you to claim credit for good things and victory, right? So if someone is doing something that is wrong or immoral or unethical, right? And they're doing it as part of a mob, it doesn't matter if it's a mob that's going out looting and vandalizing things or committing a crime, or doing something, committing atrocities that happened in reference to what you were just saying, or other historical atrocities, the responsibility is dissipated, right? It's like, well, it wasn't me. I was just following orders. I was part of this thing, whatever. It might even be hard to identify the individual. So it dissipates that responsibility. But then when you want to claim a victory, like, most obvious example is like sports teams or I was going to say political teams, which is what they are. Mm-hmm. It's like you're not even a part of this. You're not on the court. You're not on the field. You're not even playing the game. But just by identifying as a member of that group, you can now say, hey, we won. I was part of this thing, whatever. So I think that's something that's very attractive about the herd, beyond the things that we often talk about. I think that's also a part of it as well. And so, given we're living in this time of people liking to deny personal responsibility and not be accountable, I think that's very attractive. I think what you do is scary to a lot of people. What I do is scary to a lot of people, because if you're doing it and you are, it's on you. It comes down to you, wins, losses, you know, victories, whatever it is, it comes down to you. And that's great, because you're in control and you're empowered and you can properly take credit for the things that you do that are great, or the achievements you make. But it also means that if you mess up or you do the wrong thing or something doesn't go well, especially, again, multiply that by being a public figure who hundreds of thousands or millions of people are connected to, you also have to take your L's, right? You've got to be like, hey, you know what? I was wrong. I made a mistake, or I said something stupid, or I did this thing and it didn't work, whatever. And I think so many people are afraid of that, because, I mean, besides death, there's no greater fear than social judgment.
I agree with that 100%. It's just so much easier to operate in a herd, like you said, because if you make a mistake, you have somebody to pick you back up. But if mm-hmm. you make a mistake and you're by yourself, you have to own up to it. And personal responsibility and accountability is hard. I'm a Leo, so I hate admitting I'm wrong. I hate it. Hate it, hate it, hate it. But
Leo gang.
I hate admitting I'm wrong, but you know what? As I've matured, I'll be like, I apologize. I was wrong. I'm hating every moment of this, but I'm still owning it. And I apologize. I am sorry. I'm going to do. And one of the things that I do with my daughter is she's like, Mom, I'm sorry. And I'm like, no. I don't want you to apologize to me. I want you to tell me what you did. Mm-hmm. Why was it wrong? And what steps you're going to take to improve on it or to not mm-hmm. do it. And the reason why is because if you just say, I'm sorry, you're not showing growth. You're not showcasing that you care. Because to me, an apology, words are great. But at the same time, if there's no actions to support those words, or at least effort for positive change, I don't like, let's say that she gets her milk and she dumps the whole thing on the floor. And she's like, Mom, I'm sorry. Well, what did you do was wrong? Mommy, I dumped milk on the floor. Why was that wrong? Yeah. It was wrong because the milk is supposed to stay in the cup and I made a mess. What are you going to do to change it? I'm not going to dump milk on the floor. And let's say the next day she comes in my office and instead of dumping the whole cup of milk on the floor, it's only half of a cup of milk. Guess what? Am I going to be upset still? I'm going to be a little frustrated, but at the same time, at least that is a step in the right direction. And it's a very silly analogy, but at the same time, most humans cannot change overnight instantly. And that's okay. It's about mini victories. It's about taking steps to better yourself as a human. Because no, let's face it, no entrepreneur is going to become a multimillionaire overnight. It doesn't happen that way. You have to take mini baby steps, mini victories mm-hmm. to go ahead and build that up. So if my daughter, as a human being, as a little person, if she is taking steps and dumping out less milk every single day on the floor, guess what? Is it going to piss me off? Yeah. But at the same time, she is working on not dumping the entire milk cup on the floor.
Amen. Wendy, what should we call this podcast? I don't know what the title of this episode.
The Uncancelable Woman. I have no idea.
We've talked about so many things that I'm like, man, what are we even going to call this?
I don't know. I had a great time. I don't know what we're going to call it. I don't know.
Okay. Why you shouldn't dump your milk on the floor. I don't know. I'll figure something out.
This is awesome.
Wendy, where can people find you online?
You guys can find me. I am Crypto Wendio everywhere. And the reason why is because I mostly talk about crypto. That's my get down. That's my jam. That's my hustle. And
we didn't even mention it.
Well, I know, because I do, because this is the thing. Yeah. As a mother, social issues are very important to me because I want my daughter to be able to thrive. And I feel that when I decided to have a child, my job became from keeping myself healthy was to keep this other person healthy and thrive. When people have kids, and I think a lot of people don't really understand this, your life is essentially dedicated to this person until they're able to sustain. Obviously, there's things that happen. There's, you know, all kinds of stuff that can happen. But at the same time, it is your job to be the best parent that you can. And that's determined on who you are as a person. So for me, if I am not doing the best, like I have a platform, I'm really blessed and lucky to have a platform. I worked hard for it, but I've got a really great platform. And if I'm not using my platform to speak, even if I get 2 likes on a tweet, I don't care. At least I'm using my platform to say what I feel that I need to say to become a better person, to become a better parent, to provide a better life for my child. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing that as a parent, then you've failed. There's not a whole lot of ways that you can fail as a parent, but if you're not trying to be a better version of yourself and dedicating, obviously you got to set boundaries, but if you're not trying to improve the quality of life of your child, or you're not willing to do that, then having kids is not for you, because it is not, I'm going to pop this kid out. They're going to go to public school. Not my problem. It is daily struggles. It's beautiful, but it's also hard too. And that is my job as a public figure, however people want to classify me. It's my job to provide for my child, to keep her healthy and safe. That is my number one job. Part of keeping her healthy and safe is making sure she has a good education, a roof over her head, and I'm giving her love and support, but also calling her out on her bull and walking with her side by side to help her improve her essence as a person, I guess, and to be the best decent person that she can be, of course, with setting boundaries, because boundaries are immensely important for both boys and girls in different ways.
Amen. Real talk with Wendy O. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Wendy. It's been amazing talking to you.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunting you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a bang, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.